The pre-K through 12 appropriations subcommittee will come to order. Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Fawn?
Here.
Vice Chair Bell?
Here.
Representative Lupus?
Yes, here.
Andrade?
Here.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Bush?
Here.
Hawkins?
Here.
Maney?
Here.
McLean?
Here.
Roach?
Present.
Smith?
Here.
Trunell?
Here.
Valdez? Willite?
Here.
Williams?
Here.
We have a quorum, sir.
Thank you. We have a quorum. Members, please make sure all electronic devices are turned off or are on vibrate. So members, today we have a relatively short agenda with just two general bills, HB 1115 and CS for HB 1193. But I am actually going to have to step out in a minute to go and present a bill in another committee. So I don't know that I will be here for the debate. And frankly, depending on how long the other bill takes, I may not make it back before the end of the meeting. So I wanted to make a few comments that I normally would make at the end of the meeting before I hand over the gavel to the vice chair. This has been quite an adventure for me for the past 2 years. I think we have proposed and made substantial changes in work coming out of this committee from school choice, and now we're focused on virtual and ensuring there's accountability in our schools. So a lot of good work, I think, has come out of here. And I've tried as much as possible to take those on the committee and those who've watched on the journey alongside me as I've learned these things. The downside is you've had to listen to me talk a whole lot, but you've certainly seen a lot of presentations, and I've tried to share what I have learned, and I'm very grateful. So I want to say thank you to a few people. I want to thank the Speaker and Chair Trumbull for giving me the opportunity to do this for the past 2 years. They certainly didn't have to, and so it is an honor to be able to do it. I want to thank the governor, who is also a friend of mine and who I've partnered with, as many as you've seen over the past 24 hours. I also want to thank staff. So the ideas that you like generally came from them. The ideas that you don't generally came from me. So, we could not do this without them. And to Denise and Ryan and Adrian, I am incredibly grateful. I want to take a particular moment to thank Denise. So she will remember that 6 years ago, I was a freshman in this room when now Senator Diaz was the chair of this committee. And I had a couple appropriations I really, really wanted to get as a freshman, and I didn't really know as a freshman you're not supposed to get appropriations, particularly new ones. And I constantly told Denise, well, that she was my favorite budget chief. She was the only one that I knew, but it turned out to be true, and it's still true. Here in my fifth and sixth year. I'll also, I don't know if you know, but I was the chair of higher ed appropriations for my last 2 years, and after my first and second year, both budget chiefs retired. Maybe I've learned, or maybe you're better at dealing with me than I guess they are. But I really appreciate the work that all of you have done, and all of the success we have created in this committee, it is because of the work that you all have done. I also want to thank my vice chair and my ranking member for going along with this and putting up with me and all of the work that we have done. I know it's not always easy, but I am appreciative, as well as all of the members. I've tried to run a collegial and an inclusive process to the point where, again, on our conforming bill, which frankly I thought would go down on party lines, I will never forget that bill coming out unanimously. That will be one of my lasting memories, frankly, of my time in the legislature. The last thing is I want to give you all a gift, which is I expect this to be our last meeting, which is why I'm making these remarks now. It is certainly possible that we may meet again. We are authorized to meet again on Monday, but if Monday this is the only committee that you have, you won't have to be returning to Tallahassee on Sunday because of me. So with that, if there's nothing else, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Bell, and maybe I'll be back, maybe I won't.
Chair, before you leave, I would like to make a couple of comments.
I would
just like to thank you for your leadership in this committee. You've been a great mentor to me, amongst others, and you've kept us with focusing on the prize, which are our children, our students of the state of Florida. You've said that the whole time, that we will focus on students and make sure that they get the proper education to go out into the workforce. And I think as a body here, this is what we're sent to Tallahassee to do. And so I would just like to thank you for your leadership and your boldness throughout the whole committee. And yesterday, when you brought out the budget, you were just on A-plus for everything, because you were able to rebut it and say, this is what we're going to do as the state of Florida for our students of the state. So I would like to thank you again.
Thank you. Well, some of our colleagues might not agree that they liked what I did yesterday, so I want to be respectful of that. I'm glad you did. So, Ranking Member Wilhite, is that agreement with me, or you'd like to? I mean, you're sitting as far away as possible, so you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair. I guess staff has some phenomenal ideas, is what I would say, as you said. So I think you understand what I mean by that. Listen, I'm not going to always agree with you philosophically on things. I certainly don't, again, we've debated and talked about some things. But I do appreciate, first of all, you always willing to hear me, talk to me, understand things, even if we don't agree. We will agree that we believe that in our minds what we're doing is best for the kids and the future of our kids of our state. So I have enjoyed being on this committee with you, and I do too want to thank your staff. They do a great job. And so although it is a bittersweet end, maybe it is good that it is the end, because there won't be those disagreements on some more bills coming forward from you. So did I say that out loud? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity serving on this, and I wish everyone the best.
Thank you. And by the way, folks who know, Representative Wilhite and I may disagree on things, but he and I are sponsoring a bill in a different area together. And so, you know, it shows that in most of what we do in here, we can disagree on certain things but work together on others. All right, so thank you. I don't need any more accolades. My head's big enough. And I'm going to turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Bell. And if this doesn't take long, I'll see you all back in a little bit. All right. Go get them.
Well, good morning. And at this time, we will hear House Bill 1115, High School Graduation Requirements and Personal Finance, by Representative Basada Cabrera.
Thank you, Chair. HB 1115 guarantees Florida students receive a half-credit personal finance education course to prepare them for financial success after high school, regardless of where they choose to take their next steps. This bill will make sure that students know banking practices, money management, such as spending, credit scores, managing debt, loan applications, basic principles of insurance policies, federal income taxes, and local tax assessments. That is the bill.
Thank you. Are there any amendments? None. Seeing no amendments, are there any questions on the bill? Is there anyone wishing to testify? And we have a lot of cards here. We have Jean, if I wreck this, it's, I apologize in advance, Jean Sibenar, and she is with the SELF, and would you like to speak? She says she's in support. Yes, okay. Judy Riley, and she is also in support. Catherine White is in support. Cherry Krem, that is in support. Carolyn Taylor also waves in support. Deborah Ryan waves in support. Damian Jane waves in support. Leslie Doogie waves in support. Austin Stowers, which represents CFO Jimmy Petronas, waves in support. David Strubbs, Foundation for Florida's Future, waves in support. Heidi Daniels, Florida Citizens Alliance, waves in support. And Danny McMillan from Florida PTA, waves in support. If there's anyone else wishing to testify, if you need to fill out the form. So now we're in debate. Does this have anybody? Yes. Representative Hawkins, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep, this is a great bill. I remember a class like this that I had in high school, and the fact that you can have real-life experiences thrown at you when it's kind of only make-believe before you actually get into the real world is outstanding and definitely needed right now, as I think that too many people don't worry about savings and debt and how that happens. So if we can teach our children now differently, I think it's just outstanding you're bringing this bill. Thank you for it.
Thank you. Representative Will Hallett, you are recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Listen, I think this is the right message to send, that we should make sure that our children understand the value of money, the banking system and industry, know that easily you can run into trouble if you're not understand it. But I do have a little concern, and I mentioned this to you yesterday. I mean, I think that kids' lives sometimes are steered through their electives. Because you start a kid in high school, and my son thinks he's going to be an astronaut, and we know the number of astronauts really there are. But, you know, he's taking, like, another cooking class right now, and he literally loves it. And that could be the thing that sparks in his mind right now that starts his career. And that's an elective. And so I think when we start decreasing our electives and start increasing our directions that we are forcing our kids to go, I don't know if that's always the right way, but I was thinking about it today. You know, we already require algebra, algebra 2, trigonometry, geometry, all those different things that a lot of times that some people never use in their life, that maybe this would have been a space where this could have been taught in one of those classes potentially, that might have freed up and still allowed that elective time, because I think that's real life experience math versus some of these other classes that maybe some people will never use some of that stuff in their career. But again, I do support this policy, and I think it's the right direction. My only concern is if there is an area that maybe there isn't a half credit percent possibility that, you know, if there aren't in that area, that there aren't schools don't offer half credit times. And so that might be your only hurdle to find out that if those electives are full times instead of a half credit time frame on it, that would be it, though. Other than that, I do really appreciate bringing this policy forward and understand how important it is. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Yes, you're recognized.
I just want to say that Broward County is ahead of the curve. We already have a financial literacy class, so I hope when DOE is working on developing the curriculum, they look to us also to make sure that there's an online component as well, because the half credit fits in nicely to meet the online requirement for virtual. I think this would have been better for my daughter than taking PE online, but whatever. But I'm really glad to support this bill, and thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Balderman. Anyone else that would like to debate? Okay. Before we close, I'd also like to thank you for this great bill. I wish I'd had it 48 years ago when I graduated from high school, something to go out into the world, because, you know, we, and especially in today's time, we want it yesterday. And there's so many people that find themselves in trouble, you know, with credit card debt and everything else. So thank you for this great bill. And with that being said, we do have one other appearance card, and it's Gina Rotunda from the Florida Bankers Association, and she waves in support. Okay, thank you. Seeing no other debate, we'll now close, and Representative Besada Cabrera, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee, and I understand your concerns, Representative Wilhite. Electives are incredibly important, but even with this bill, the state of Florida would still be the state with the most elective credits for our high school students to take, because whether our students are headed to one of our great colleges or universities, a valuable trade or apprenticeship program, the military, or career in the arts, every single one of them deserves to be equipped with education and information on how to succeed and thrive financially in our society. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing close on the bill, we will now call the roll.
Chair Fine. Vice Chair Bell.
Yes.
Representative Lupus.
Yes.
Andrade.
Yes.
Bartleman.
Yes.
Bush.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes.
McLean.
Yes.
Roach.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Trunow.
Yes.
Valdez.
Yes.
Willite.
Yes.
Williams.
Yes.
14 yeas, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. Members, by your vote, House Bill 1115 will be reported favorably. Thank you. Next up, we have CSHB 1193, K-12, Assessment and Accountability by Early Learning and Elementary Education Subcommittee, Representative Placenta. Placentia.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll just call him Coach. You're up.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Before I get started on this bill, I just want to make a couple comments. Number one,
Representative Wilhite, we have an astronaut training program in my district that I think your son would love over at Kennedy Space Center. You should bring both your boys over, and they'd have a wonderful time. We'd love to host them. I want to echo some of the comments that Chair Fine said about Ms. Potvin. You have been wonderful to work with over the years. I will make sure that you see a 407 area code coming into your office from time to time, even when I'm not here, because you have been a wealth of information and someone that I can depend on to make sure I get data correctly and budgeting correctly when I'm having conversations back home. And I don't know how you did this, Madam Chair, but it's so much nicer to see you than Chair Fine in front of me.
Thank you. So, we won't tell him.
With that, I'm going to begin to explain a very long and complicated bill, so please bear with me, and I will need glasses for this. So HB 1193, this bill maintains the VPK through grade 8 progress monitoring system established last year by HB 7011, but with a few enhancements. The bill revises the progress monitoring system by expanding progress monitoring for ELA to include grades 9 and 10 and designating the end-of-year administration of the progress monitoring system in grades 3 and above as a statewide standardized ELA and math assessment for accountability purposes. The bill includes the progress monitoring system in the 5% limitation on total school hours that may be used for assessment. The bill also provides for a third-party study on the effectiveness of the progress monitoring system and how it can be used to further reduce the assessment and accountability footprint in education. The bill requires that progress monitoring results be provided to parents in an individual student report. These individual student reports must be accessible through a school district's learning management system or for learning coalitions in a format determined by the State Board of Education. The bill requires the State Board of Education to adjust the school grades grading scale under certain circumstances, starting with the 23-24 school year and annually thereafter. The State Board must review the school grades statewide for each school type, elementary, middle, and high, and combination schools. And just for clarification, those three types are individually reviewed. They're exclusive and they are not combined when you're taking a look at this escalator. If 75% of all graded schools for a school type earn an A or B, the State Board must adjust the school type's grading scale upward. With respect to school improvement, the bill provides school districts flexibility in selecting services under an external operator turnaround plan. To address schools that continually struggle to stay out of school improvement requirements, the bill limits turnaround plan options for schools that earn a D or F within 2 years after exiting turnaround status. Since the current statewide standardized ELA and math assessments are replaced by the new progress monitoring system, the bill holds schools harmless for their 22-23 school grades or school improvement ratings. However, a school may exit turnaround status based on its 22-23 school grades. For purposes of promotion to fourth grade and high school graduation requirements, the bill requires performance on the 22-23 end-of-year progress monitoring assessment to be linked to 21-22 student performance expectations. In addition, a student may be promoted to grade 4 for the 23-24 school year by demonstrating acceptable performance as determined by the school district, and that is the bill.
Thank you, Rep. Placencia. I'm sorry. Are there any questions from the rep? Yes. Rep. Barterman.
And recognized. Thank you, Chair Bell. I like to say that.
Thank you.
So peaceful. So I'm just going to go through a couple with the, I have them marked, if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so page 2458. And by the way, thank you for always being available. I know we've been talking about this bill since the first time I saw you at breakfast when I came back. So thank you so much. So when you're talking about the progress monitoring in 3 through 10, you talk about three progress monitoring tools. So my question is the third progress monitoring the standardized assessment, or are you going to give a third progress monitoring and the standardized assessment?
Recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Barterman. So the third assessment is the summative assessment. You're going to have a PM1, a PM2,
okay,
and the PM3 is the summative. There will not be a need for an additional PM3.
You recognize?
So that summative will be a criterion reference test. And then my question is, who is determining, and the progress monitoring test, is that going to be determined by the DOE?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that will be determined by the department.
Chair? One of the biggest concerns by school districts is the implementation of all of these things. So it's very important that the progress monitoring tool matches the summative assessment, because there have been cases where they don't match. And so how are you working with them? Or are you just going to, they're going to be able to bid and do that? Because if the progress monitoring doesn't match the assessment, they're going to have to use a different tool to get to the assessment piece, the summative assessment piece.
Recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bartleman. And that is an excellent question. So one of the things I learned in running this bill is the coordination between the department and our districts, and the years of collaboration that they've had in determining what is the best course of action or the best course that we should take as a state in assessing our children. I've met with multiple school districts. I think now I've met with 5 separate school districts, and I've had extensive meetings with the department as well. And in each of those meetings, I've learned of really how strong that relationship is and the communication between the department and our districts are. And I feel pretty confident in the department's ability, first, to understand what districts need, and second, to roll that out.
Thank you. Another?
Okay. Thank you.
So with the 5% timeline, with the pre-K-2 assessments, we spoke about this. I was a teacher, so for me to really assess reading, I need to give like an individual reading inventory. I have to hear the kids read. I have to know that they need diphthongs, digraphs, short E's, long R controlled vowels, all of that stuff. But it takes time, and I'm not saying for someone in the primary grades, that is a worthy assessment, and that's the only way you're going to make sure they read. But it does take time, so I'm curious as to, I want to stress the coordination and how that is going, the implementation of this is going to work. So has anyone approached you about that? I'm sure I have.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bartleman. And I do remember a conversation. I apologize. Since that conversation, I haven't had an opportunity to speak with classroom teachers. I've met with school district assessment teams and superintendents. In those conversations with superintendents and the assessment teams, that was never brought up to me. They did have a long list of concerns, a lot of which really didn't speak to the actual changes to statute, but current statute, and some of it, rightfully so, changes that they wanted to see that aren't necessarily addressed in the bill. But the concerns that you brought forward to me weren't concerns that they had. I still plan on meeting with classroom teachers. I know the FEA is trying to coordinate a meeting with myself and some of their teachers, and I will do that.
One more.
Oh, I have to get to the other. Only get one more. I have to get to the grading, so I have to choose the best one. Okay. So all right. So let me go. I only get one more bite at this. This is such an important bill. So let me go to, this is going to be a run-on question. So when you go to line 13, it has to do with the grading of the schools, 1391 to 1394. And I did have other ones, but okay. So here is my very long run-on question, Chair Bell. Thank you very much. Okay, so you're moving the bar. What this is for the members is that when the percentage of schools earning a greater A in the current year represents 75% or more of all school grades within a particular school type, you're going to then adjust the bar annually. That is very confusing to parents. It's very confusing to school systems. Well, because you're just constantly moving the bar, and I don't think that's appropriate as you go year to year, number one. Number two, when you talk about testing students, you're not comparing apples to apples. You're comparing apples to oranges. Because if I'm in elementary school, I have a brand new cohort of students in third grade. I have my fifth grade aging out into the middle school, which is a brand new cohort for the sixth grade. So if you were always testing the same kids, maybe, but you're always going to have a different group of students within that cohort for the school grade. And because of that, it's going to be confusing to parents, because you could have 64% of the kids reading or performing, and the next year have the same percentage of kids performing, but now you're going to tell that group of parents that their school's a B. when it was an A last year.
Chair Barnum, or Rep Barnum, how is that fair? Is this a question?
Yeah, it is, okay. But I had to get to the...
Sounds like you're debating, okay.
No, I'm not. It's very technical, though.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so my point is with a different cohort of students, why are you continuously moving the bar? Because you're comparing apples to oranges, and you're going to confuse parents, you're going to confuse neighborhoods, and quite frankly, it's really unfair. And it's not just the public schools, it's the charter schools that have to deal with this. We made a point before to have a consistent, parent-friendly, understandable system. Changing this year to year actually, I think, confuses parents, confusing schools, and doesn't do the accountability system justice if you're always going to do that. So is there any movement on this? Any discussions to change this? I know this has been brought up in previous committees.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Bartleman, I don't think you, I think you didn't address exactly what the language does. So this was an amendment we had, It's an amendment we had in the last committee stop. So this isn't an annual change. So there won't be a moving of the bar as you spoke on an annual basis. It may not happen. It may happen once in 10 years. It may not happen at all in 10, 15, or 20 years. And so members, what she's referring to is currently we have our school grading system where as an example, if you get a 62% or higher, your school's an A. And so 62% conceptually, if we would talk about it, none of us would think of that as an A. But that's not the argument right now. Let's go to exactly what she was asking or kind of generally what she was asking. What would happen in this bill if it becomes law is, and I spoke about it when I kind of went off script for a second in my opening, and I kind of differentiated in the types of schools. You have elementary, you have middle, you have high, and then you have combination. Combination are your K-8s, right? They're all going to be judged independently. Elementary will not be judged or clumped in with middle or high or combination. It will be judged solely based off other elementary schools statewide. If 75% of all our elementary schools get a B or higher in any given year, then we're going to move up that percentage by 5 or 0. So, for example, if you had to currently get a 62% to have an A, the next year the bar moves up to 65% or better, you would have to get that to get an A. So theoretically, if you score a 63 or 64 the following year, where you normally would have been an A school, you're now a B school. Now, that wouldn't happen every year, and I could be corrected if I'm wrong, but I don't believe there has been a time this has ever happened when we've had 75% of all our schools in any type receive a B or higher. So we're looking at the likelihood of this being difficult, being very, very, very difficult to attain, but we have to keep reaching for something to attain. And I'll give you a couple of reasons why. So if you take a look, out of all the A schools, we have 773 A schools in our state. Of those 773 A schools, so if you have one of your children at this A school, you probably think your kid's going to a great school and they're doing a great job. Before I finish this, I always tell people there's no such thing as bad schools and good schools. All schools are great, in my opinion, regardless of their letter grade. But we need to have something to measure, and we need to have something to hold all institutions accountable to make sure that no kids are falling through the crack. What's happening in some of these even A schools is you do have students falling through the crack. So in 773 A schools, 72 of those schools, 50% or more of their students are below grade reading level. If you take into account B schools, of the 587 B schools, 295 of those schools have 50% or more of their students under their grade reading level. If you combine them, that's 367 schools. If you combine that with your C schools, that's 995 schools in our state where 50% or more of our students are reading below grade level. When you start going into the data, you have to start asking yourself, are we doing enough to make sure that all of our students are receiving the best education possible? And so when you take a look at this automatic escalator language that we have in here, I will admit there are some challenges with it, and we're working on taking a look at it and seeing if we can make some changes to it. This would not be the appropriate committee to make those changes because it is a budget committee, And so those are changes that if we make them will be made in the full Ed Committee. We have spoken with school districts about this language. We've spoken with the department on this language. And I had great conversations with both, and both gave great ideas on how we can make this idea better in statute. But understand that when we're holding our schools and our institutions accountable, we're doing that for the betterment of each and every single student. And if you take a look at the history of our accountability system from its inception until now, what you'll see is that our least served students have made the biggest gains because we cared enough to create an accountability system. If we just sit on our accountability system and we're not challenging it from year to year, then there is a tendency for complacency and for students then to fall through those cracks as well. And so I understand, Representative Bartleman. I served 15 years in a classroom, and when I was a teacher and I'd see a lot of these bills come through, they would frighten me as well. Having been here 8 years and looking at the data and understanding the policy, I know right from wrong, and I wholeheartedly believe that this language is in the best interest of our children. And if it's passed, you'll see some great gains moving forward in the next 10, 15, 20 years. And think about it this way. You know, schools are always aspiring to do better, especially when there's something for them to attain. When I was a teacher in the classroom, and I apologize, I'm going to save this for debate.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Well, we do have public testimonies. First, we have Carolyn Taylor that waves in support. Wendy Dodge waves in support from Polk County Schools. David Straws from Foundation of Florida's Future waves in support. Anna Lewis waves in support, and she's from the Florida Chamber of Commerce. Heidi Daniels, Florida Citizens Alliance, waves in support. Allison Sitt from Florida Department of Education, waves in support. Deborah Baker Ryan, waves in opposition. Marie Claire Lemon, waves in opposition. Oh, she would like to come on up. And Maria, you're from the Fund Education Now.
Yes, thank you very
Welcome.
Much. Thank you.
Yes.
So I'm Marie Claire Lehman. I'm a parent of public school students, and I do represent Fund Education Now this morning. Either way you look at it, testing is not being reduced. We're either replacing one state-mandated end-of-the-year assessment with three state-mandated progress monitoring assessment, or we're imposing a new progress monitoring tool twice per year and replacing the end of the year assessment with a new one based on the new standards, which we must do, and it'll still be tied to all of the same stakes. Also, especially in the first year, while the new progress monitoring tool is not adaptive, districts will need to administer their own progress monitoring tool in addition to inform instruction. Either way, this is a bait and switch, and everyone seems to be swallowing the governor's promise, hook, line, and sinker. It's very discouraging because, mark my words, your constituents will notice next year an increase in testing as schools have no choice but to continue to administer their progress monitoring tools alongside with the new one in order to inform instruction, because we're rushing to implement a statewide tool that's not ready. And when we talk about the school grade accelerator, we have to also understand that right now the State Board of Education is already tasked with periodically adjusting the proportion of grades. So this is unnecessary right now and seems very premature. Not to get too technical, but and just as a background piece, we're still in a period of COVID effects, and none of these years are typical. And add to that a new evaluation based on new standards, new progress monitoring tools, and a scheme to constantly move that goalpost. And not to get too technical, but for some schools in 2022, the FSA will show tremendous learning gains artificially inflating the school grades, and that's going to be used as a baseline for 2022-2023 proportions of grades. And for other schools where kids are still two grade levels behind right now, the huge jump in school grades will come when we add back that learning gain in 23-24. And I get that this is really technical, but what's going to happen is we could have a disaster effect the following year where we'll have use that accelerator to increase that proportion of grades and schools won't be able to meet it. And so the grades are going to seesaw like this. And what we're doing is inviting the districts to find ways to work the system in order to earn recognition dollars or avoid turnaround status. At the end of the day, this plan is a return to No Child Left Behind. It'll cause manufactured disruptions meant to feed the privatization effort. My kids are in public school, and I see the effect of this kind of testing culture on a daily basis. And my kids have been in D and C schools the entire time, and the schools are losing students to vouchers and voucher private schools and charter schools based on those school grades, even though I completely agree with Representative Plasencia that all the schools are very good. But the case is that they have D grades, and parents don't like to see that, and they won't like to see their A schools become B schools either. And I'm almost done. But this testing culture, I just want you to really understand how these high stakes will affect even those progress monitoring tools. And that means that there's a testing. We start talking about testing in January, and I don't know how many of you are parents of public schools, but school students, but our students are in hold periods when other students are testing, even for makeup tests. And so all of this really affects the course of a school day, and moving the goalpost is going to only accentuate that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Catherine White waves in opposition. Cherry Krim also waves in opposition. Judy Riley waves in opposition. Jean Cybernoller waves in opposition. Ashley Modesto is an opponent. And would you like to speak? Come on up. And welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you to this committee for your commitment to education. Coach P, thank you as well. I am a Orange County Public School teacher, and I am a math teacher. When I see additional testing as a teacher, it gets me in my feels, I guess the best way to describe it. So currently right now, Orange County Public Schools offers three PMA testing, progress monitoring assessments. We offer them at the end of each quarter. They're two-day tests, each one of them. So we have 6 days set aside just for counting, just for our county progress monitoring. If we add additional testing with not requiring counties to remove their current progress monitoring, we're losing more and more instructional days. As a teacher, as a student, instructional days are gold. This is where students are able to learn, to grow, and to become who they are meant to be. Any sacrifice of those days needs to be a worthy cause, and adding more testing is not a worthy cause. And I want to thank you guys for your time and the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Kathy Bain that would like to also speak. And she's with the Florida Education Association.
Thank you, Chair Bell. Kathy Bain. I have to tell you, you know, we're kind of mixed minds on this bill. We are very heartened by the conversations we've had. Appreciate the willingness of the sponsor to work with us and to have, again, more and more conversations where we can talk about what we'd like to see in an accountability system. And really thanks to the sponsor for being able to have those conversations. We are still concerned because this is not a normal year, and the provisions for setting the school grades do not seem to mesh with the reality that this school year will not be a good year to compare with anything else that's normal. We are also concerned because we do see that if the state progress monitoring is overlaid on current district testing, we will have much more testing than we need. And we are teachers. We want to be able to work with our kids. We need the time to be able to look at the data and change our instruction based on the data we get. And so I was heartened to hear from the sponsor that there is still a policy committee coming, and we remain very hopeful that we will see some changes that will help maximize instructional time, minimize the testing that we need to do, and still ensure that we get great feedback for our parents and our teachers. So thank you again.
Thank you. With seeing no other appearance cards, we'll now go into debate. Yes, Rep. Valdez.
Thank you, Chair Bell. I was wondering, since we have Chancellor Oliva here, that maybe he could help us address some of the concerns that we heard in comments. I think that would be helpful for the committee.
Okay. Chair Oliva, would you like to come to the podium? Yeah, and you'll need to fill out a parents card, please.
So is there any, thank you for the opportunity to provide clarification. Is there any specific questions?
I think Rep. Valdez has one question.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Chair Bell and Chancellor. Thank you for your willingness to come and have this conversation, because this is just extremely important. As we heard from an educator and a parent of two students that are in our public school system, is it the department's idea or plan to be able to reduce some of the testing so that teachers are able to teach? I will put myself in there in a kid's position, that if I'm constantly being tested and that instruction is really not happening, I'm not going to do well on that test. So I don't want to burden children with more and more tests. So where's the balance? What does the department see and the state board see about where is the balance on this testing? And I do agree, Coach, that a 62% is not an A. I mean, if you look at the way we grade our children, you know, a 62% is not a good grade to get. So help me understand the implementation. I'm not a teacher. I was a school board member implementing policies. So what Representative Bartleman and Coach P did on a daily basis for many years, I do not have that pedagogy. So I'm looking for your expertise in this area, along with the educators, to help us understand how we can reduce some of this testing or what it's going to look like in its implementation.
Recognize, Chancellor. Sure.
Thank you. And thank you for the question and for the concern. And I think it's important when responding to that question to kind of talk about how did we get to this component. And early on in Governor DeSantis's tenure, when he signed Executive Order 1932, he tasked the department or agency to do 7 very clear, definitive bullets. One was to do a review of our standards, to eliminate Common Core, get high-quality materials, provide a roadmap to being number one in the nation in literacy. But there's also an opportunity, there's a bullet in there that says to find innovative ways to streamline assessments. When we engaged in the work of evaluating all of our standards that are aligned with the assessments that we're discussing today on the two primary subjects of English, language arts, and math, we conveyed stakeholder feedback groups from all over the state. We received over 30,000 public comments. We met with teachers in every district and asked them to provide input on the standards. In that conversation, it became very clear from our educators from all over the state that said, when we write new standards, can we look at the way we assess students? While there's value in a summative assessment and getting that snapshot in time, the teachers felt and were very clear that they could better inform instruction and practice if we moved more to a more frequent testing monitoring program like this progress monitoring system, so that they can tailor instruction to meet individual students' needs throughout the year instead of getting the results in the summer when they felt like they could have provided intervention sooner. So it was because of the conversations with educators and parents and teachers that we started beginning to have this conversation on how can we reimagine and find innovative ways to assessing students. When you look at what's in current law today with the passage of 7011 last year and some of the progress monitoring requirements, we are required to, if we do nothing, we will have 3 progress monitors that we're currently putting in place right now that we have an ITN and intend to negotiate with out now to be aligned with our new standards, plus the statewide summative assessment system. If we move forward with this vision, we will be reducing testing because we're going to have those 3 progress monitors And that third progress monitor will take this assessment and conjoin with the progress monitoring system. So there will be a reduction in assessment by moving forward with this bill. When you talk about districts that choose on their own to do additional progress monitoring, I think that's a valid concern from educators to say, we shouldn't be running dual platforms. We shouldn't be over testing. And I'll be the first person to stand in front of everybody and say, we shouldn't test just to test. There should be a reason that we're getting these assessments because it should drive instruction. And we need to know how students are performing. I'm a parent of children that are in public schools. My kids take assessments. I actually get excited to see how they did because I know they get assessed by their teachers in a report card. I get school grades from my children every 9 weeks to let them know how they're doing. Then I get that annual summative assessment. I think it validates the performance that the teachers are seeing because it's an independent review of how they're performing. This information in a progress monitoring format will give parents, teachers, and families real-time information because there's requirements that we're going to turn around this data quickly. It's going to help drive instruction. And then that end of the year summative assessment's not a surprise. We should know how the students are doing, and we should be able to provide opportunities for acceleration. I think oftentimes we think about the remedial component of progress monitoring. But I can tell you right now, if a fourth grader walks into the classroom and gets a perfect score on the first progress monitor in English, language, arts, and math, then as a school, we need to be having different conversations about the placement of that student because they need to be accelerated. So this is a good snapshot in time to measure how students are coming into our classrooms and providing real information to families, to teachers, and to our parents in a timely manner so that we can make educational choices faster.
Okay, thank you, Chancellor. We have a question from Representative Andrade.
Thank you, Chair Bell. I know this is somewhat out of the norm, you coming up after in debate, but we appreciate, obviously, I think everybody does, your participation. You answered exactly, a lot of the concerns that a lot of folks had on the initial proposal, but I had a question more on the morale side of it specifically. There's been, it's a kind of a rote or trite kind of, repetitive complaint about high stakes testing and how much it affects the morale of students and makes them, nervous. And, some students aren't good test takers and, some students might excel in test taking, but not classroom participation. I was curious if you had an idea of whether or not a shift from this kind of high stakes testing where students are competing against each other and comparing themselves against each other to more you're competing against yourself and we're focusing on your growth. Do you think there are opportunities for improving morale amongst students and amongst teachers with this shift from proficiency to progress?
Recognized.
So I think that's an excellent question. And I hear from students and families about testing anxiety. I think that's real in some students. Some students, they probably look at it as this is just another day of school and I do whatever the adults tell me to do and I want to do well. I think it's hard to make a flat determination to answer that. I think each student comes to the table with their own unique set of experiences, especially around testing. I do feel like schools are already progress monitoring, so students already know how they're performing. What this is instead of every district doing their own progress monitoring, it's a unified, coordinated system where for educators, districts, state-level folks, parents can see how their children are all doing at the same time. And with a high mobility rate for families moving from one district to other districts, this will at least have a consistency that students will face. So it may reduce some of that anxiety. But it's really hard to answer that question because every child's different. And I think that's why we rely on our teachers who build relationships with children, and then they have those individual conversations and give those little pep talks on the side and know how to handle those situations best.
Okay. Thank you, Chancellor Oliva. Representative Bartleman.
Thank you, Chair. Mm-hmm. When you're considering the school grades, are you going to use the progress monitoring one into the formula for the summative assessment?
Recognized.
So at this time, the intent would be that third progress monitor would be the progress monitor that would be used for capturing the overall scores for the school grades and linking for learning gains from year to year.
So how does that get rid of the high stakes testing? Because as an educator, what I would do is look at a PM1 and look at my summative end of the year performance and say, did I teach that kid? Did they move? And I would look at their gains. But you're still then basically saying that someone can perform better on their PM2 than their summative assessment, correct? That's possible that a kid could have a better testing day than the other, correct? So you're still creating a high stakes test with the sum. I just want to be, I support the bill, but I just want to be clear. You're still creating a high stakes test for teacher salaries and one snapshot and one testing for a grade. Is that true?
Representative Bardeman, yes. You're getting into debate. So, and this will go to another committee. I believe it's going to go to the Ed Policy Committee. So we're getting kind of down in the weeds with his. So.
And I can respond.
If you'll respond, a quick response.
There is nothing that would prohibit a teacher from monitoring their own progress from progress monitoring, progress monitoring two to progress monitoring three. In fact, teachers are going to do that, and then they're going to make educational pivots. So I think we would encourage teachers to review that. But at the end of the day, we still have to meet federal testing requirements as prescribed by federal law, and we have our current state accountability model system, and this will help make that more seamless.
Okay, thank you. Representative Valdez, you recognized?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. And again, thank you for your willingness to talk to us in this space. So what I heard you say earlier, that if a school board chooses to implement and maintain their current progress monitoring system, that then is a local choice for them to continue doing those progress monitoring testing in between. So the school board could come back and potentially maybe shift in how and give teachers more autonomy as to how they're going to be able to monitor their kids in preparation for the time in which we're going to do that very first progress monitoring.
Okay. Representative Valdez, let's stay to the bill.
That is the
and
bill.
Your topic.
It's progress monitoring. It's testing.
Those would be local decisions. So I think districts are having those discussions now on how do we supplement this initiative so that we're not duplicating efforts and we're being more seamless. So those are ongoing conversations.
We appreciate you being here. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, if not, we'll move on to debate. And Representative Bardeman?
Okay, this is going to shock everybody. Thank you, Chair. But I actually support this bill and the concept. Believe it or not, I support the concept of this bill because I'm an educator. And my goal is that every kid reads on level. That's my goal. Don't ever lose sight of what I'm saying. That is my goal. How we get there is the difference. This is a step in the right direction with the progress monitoring. But the devil's going to be in the details. If they do a bid contract and they contract with a company, because remember, there's going to be a private company formulating this test, and the progress monitoring does not correlate directly to the summative assessment, teachers will suffer and teachers will be forced to have to do other progress monitoring to meet the needs of the summative assessment. Why is the summative assessment so important? Because you're going to grade a community and you're going to grade kids and you're going to have teacher salaries and everything based on that summative assessment, which will still be a high stakes test. And I just want to point that out because I'm supporting this, but I don't want to sell my people and my community a bill of goods. There's still going to be a high stakes test at the end. What this is doing is driving better instruction. What this is, any good teacher is progress monitoring all the time. This is not unheard of. This is the norm of a good teacher. So I support this. I just want to let you know. I am concerned again about the high stakes. Line 13981 clearly says that the state board shall annually, instead of periodically, which was the old language, review the whole system. I think they're going to work on that. They're going to have an issue. They're going to figure that out. But my goal is that at the end of the day, every kid reads on grade level. There are different ways to get there. Now, mind you, that this stuff is just one test. If you have a student who's a tier two or tier three on response to intervention, which are your lowest level reading, you're giving them IRIs, you're giving them tons of diagnostic assessments because you have to get them to read. So I'm supporting this bill because it's a move. There is a federal requirement for testing. There is not a federal requirement to grade our schools. There is not a federal requirement to tie teacher assessments to testing. There is not a federal requirement to label children and label communities. That is not the federal requirement. So I just want to point out the difference between what's happening federally and what's happening in Florida. It's not the annual summative assessment that's the problem. It's the way we use it here in the state. And that is the issue that teachers have. Hold us accountable. If I can't move my kids to their reading level, I should be held accountable. But this whole system is convoluted. And you are moving the bar in this every year if they meet that criteria. It's in 1381. Okay. I support your bill. I support that we're moving in the right direction. I know it's a surprise.
Thank you.
But thank you very much for bringing this forward.
Okay.
And I hope you'll work on that language.
Thank you, Rep. Barberman. Rep. Valdez, you're recognized.
She basically, as a classroom teacher, she shared the concerns that I was concerned about in the sense of how much more pressure we're going to be putting on teachers in that aspect. I do believe and support this bill as well because I believe that this is the way that we should go. And the devil is in that detail, as you very well said. So I'm looking forward to continuing the conversations with the department and with you in order to help make this bill a little bit better. And before it comes to our next stop, that I will be voting on it again. So I really do appreciate your expertise and your service as a classroom teacher, one that I aspired to be when I was a little girl, but life was different for me. So I do honor teachers and support the work that you do. And okay. We don't want to be punitive to teachers at all. On the contrary, we want student success to be what it is. And if it not for a teacher, then how would it be?
Thank you. Representative Alipas, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Plasencia, when I first heard that this bill was going to be filed, I was thinking about who's going to run this bill, because this is not an easy issue. And I think I personally can't think of anybody better to run this bill than you, and I don't say that flippantly. You've been in the classroom. You care about children. You understand the educational system. You understand the reality of what we're dealing with. And I think too often on this bill and others, we deal in an alternate universe. You have guidelines and guardrails that you have to adhere to get to the promised land, to make sure that we're ensuring that we have accountability in our system and that we're not overly testing our students. I have real concerns about the use of the word high stakes, because I think in certain respects it's used, you know, in terms of high stakes in the classroom. How does the student feel? How does the teacher feel? And I think about my wife, who was a third grade teacher for a year, and talking about the stress that she had, and that's certainly something we need to address. But then when we think of high stakes in the terms of accountability, and I've said this and you've heard me say this publicly, Representative Plasencia, I think one of the reasons Florida's public education system has done so well over the last 20 years outside of our focus on choice has been around accountability. And there's this narrative that our public school system, you know, isn't particularly good. That doesn't line up with NAEP scores. It doesn't line up with AP scores. We have a fantastic public education system in this state, and everybody in the legislature should champion it. But I think the goal of this bill is to ensure that we are doing everything we can to not create an environment of anxiety for our students and for our teachers, and I think that's exactly what you're doing. I love Representative Bartleman, and I know she's going to understand where I'm coming from. But I don't understand this concern over the annual assessment of school grades. The idea that every year schools are going to be going from B to A and A to B is just not realistic. The data doesn't flesh that out. And I think what we heard at the last committee was the math teacher who came up who said, I continue to increase the expectations for my students because I want them to reach them, and the only way they will reach them is if I expect more from them. I think that applies fully to our school districts and to our schools. And I think anyone in this room will say that a 62% is an A. We can do better. We can absolutely do better, because at the end of the day, this isn't about the schools, it's not about the district, it's about the student. And an A means that 38% of the students are not doing well. So I'm hugely grateful for your leadership on this issue. I know how hard it is, and And I know once you get it to the floor, there's still going to be people who have concerns. But your intentions are pure. No one brings stakeholders together better than you do. And I look forward to voting up on this bill.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Fine.
Thank you. And you're doing a great job. So you bring us in for a landing on this. I'm happy to sit over here and watch. But you know, I live this personally. I always think of education decisions through, and we all should, through the lens of my own children. And I have an eighth grade son who is in a government-run school and is taking many of these tests. I was very proud. He took 3 of the 5 required EOCs in seventh grade last year and passed them all. And I was profoundly affected, particularly when, and I've told this story before, but it's worth repeating, when he took his Algebra 1 EOC, again, as a seventh grader. I'm very proud of that. And when he got it back, I was mad because he didn't get a perfect score. He just got a 5. But I looked at the back, and on the back of this thing, it said it not only shared how he did, but it shared how his school did, it shared how the district did, and it shared how the state did. And I will never forget for the rest of my life seeing that in that year, in part because of COVID, that 70% of our students failed that exam. They not only didn't get a 5 like my son, they didn't get a 4, they didn't even get a 3, 70%. And you know why we should have high-stakes testing? Because life is high stakes, you know? You don't get to go through sunshine and rainbows and participation trophies and everything works out great. I know there are some who want that, and I'm not saying it's anybody in this committee, but life is high stakes. And we have to know how children are doing. We have to know how their teachers are doing. We have to know how their schools are doing. And bills like this will help determine that moving forward. I think you're making a big difference moving forward. I also like the fact that we're going to be increasing standards over time because we should be looking for continuous improvement. It's one of the fundamental premises that people use in business. Never stop improving. You reach your goal and you push forward. You're doing that, and I think we're moving the ball forward so that hopefully we end up in a world in the not-too-distant future where it's 70% of our kids are passing Algebra 1 and aren't failing it. So great job.
Thank you. Representative Will Height.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I agree, Representative Placenta, you're a great person to work on this bill. I mean, you are very thoughtful, methodical, understanding, open-minded, moderate on these issues because you recognize that it's not a party issue about kids here and what their education system is. You know it and live it. You know, listen, I wish when we did testing, we didn't do it in the middle of the year or the end of the year. I wish we did it at the beginning of the year, too, more because... and listen, I'm going to say this, and it may not be the most popular thing, but I don't think we can test kids once in a while in the year because that's the days that they're in school. Because I think we should be doing year-round schooling to begin with. I'm going to say that again. I think we should be doing year-round schooling, okay? May not be favorable to some people to say, but kids need to learn all year. And the kids that are missing out are the ones that aren't able to do things during the summer or stay in those programs or we call it summer slide, whatever we want to call it. Those socioeconomic areas that kids don't get to take advantage of those summer programs, we're losing out on them. To say that you know, 62 is an A is just, to me, doesn't seem logical. It just doesn't. You know, testing is difficult, not just for the teachers, for the parents, for the students, but I can tell you for the students, it's difficult. My son has testing anxiety. You're going to tell him all along he does all these things in school and he's doing great and you're doing great. But you know what? Next week, we're going to set aside 2 days and you're going to be tested on this, this, and this. We're going to do nothing else. You know what happens before those days? He freaks out. He doesn't do well. All of a sudden, he doesn't do good. Now they're wanting to put him in different classes, do different things with him. He gets a different plan. All this. And so I think testing, although good, and I think as humans, we always want to test because we want to say we're better than someone or where the bar is or what that number is or something. But I think you've heard me say it even too here. I think school grading is a terrible thing in some aspect. Because we continue to allow some schools, and we've called them multiple names in this legislature, that's very disheartening to me. But if you're failing 1 year and you fail the next year and you fail the next year, what's the message we're sending? I think we're sending the wrong message to our businesses and our communities where we're telling people that you shouldn't move in those areas because those are A schools, but those F schools, don't move over there. That's not a good area. And we're basing a lot of our business and our future development and economy on what our school ratings are. And I think that's difficult because I think the people in those other areas have a lot of value and they're lost they're lost in the process. So I did have a question for you, and I didn't get it in there, and I'm wondering if this pertains to voucher schools as well, if you could answer that maybe in your close or not. But again, I appreciate what you're trying to do. And listen, like Chair Fine, you know, my son, I think he took the ACT in like sixth or seventh grade or something. I mean, I'm proud of that. And that's good for him to see where maybe he's missing out or could be. But I don't put a 100% value on that. I know he's a smart kid. He wouldn't be working to be an astronaut if he wasn't, right? So, and that's one of my kids, because I have two kids in public school. And I think Chair Fine's on a lot of these committees because he knows in testing that he was told his son 1 + 1 = 3, and he's told the story many times. So what is the value of testing when the chair of the committee has concerns about our testing has said that? And I know, I take that to heart that he has said that multiple times, because I've been in that same position. And so I think testing is somewhat good, and I think we should have progress testing to find out how our teachers and students are doing. But I certainly can't put 100% value in our testing in the way it currently is done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairwoman.
Thank you. And before you close, I would just like to say I think this is a great bill that you brought to us. You're a man of integrity. You've worked with the stakeholders. I know you will continue to work with the stakeholders to make sure this is a good bill to continue on to the floor. So thank you so much. And at that end, you are ready to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, members, I think the first thing, I'm going to touch on a number of concerns and comments that were made, but I think the first one is the implementation of this. As you know, implementation is done at the department level. And to a certain extent, we have to trust that the people that are put in positions of power, much like we were by our constituents, are going to do the job that's asked of them. And so it's interesting. I've got an opportunity to... I've been in the legislature for 8 years. And before Commissioner Corcoran, had Commissioner Stewart, who I had a wonderful relationship with, and I got a chance to spend time with her staff, but not the same amount of time that I've gotten to spend with Commissioner Corcoran's staff. Now, as chair of Higher Education Appropriations, I meet regularly with the Department of Education, and so I've gotten an opportunity to really get to know our DOE, and I say that because I have always felt a reassurance that we're in great hands. I mean, Chancellor Oliva is a perfect example. I often tell everyone that I feel confident in this bill because I have him to talk to whenever I have a question that I may not necessarily know who to ask the question to. And I know that because I know his history. I know that he was in the classroom. I know that he was a principal at Flagler Palm Beach High School. I know he was a superintendent, and I've had an opportunity to talk about these issues with him. And I know teachers that have served underneath him when he was principal over at Flagler Palm Coast High School. And so knowing him, knowing Chancellor Mack, knowing Chancellor Hebda, and I know that they're in tech schools and higher education, but knowing the quality of people that Commissioner Corcoran has hired at the Department of Education gives me a sense of assurance that whatever we do here, when it gets passed on to the department, is going to be in great hands. And so I'm very confident of that. And that's what I share with stakeholders, whether it's teachers, superintendents, or parents, when they ask, well, what about the implementation? Going on to some of the other comments, I think what happens often, and I think Representative Alupas alluded to this, is we sometimes elevate these arguments to much larger arguments that really don't pertain to the bill. And so the concerns that we've had for years with what's called high-stakes testing, which I don't like using that word, because I think that as adults, we create an environment for our kids by the words that we use, by the actions that we show them. And so this bill is almost entirely about what teachers and principals, superintendents have been asking for, and that's that the assessments guide instruction. And we've had that in progress monitoring at the county level. And now at the request of our districts, we're moving it, hopefully, to the state level. And that's a great thing. Representative Wilhite, when we talk about over-testing, and I'm not sure if you're the one that said over-testing, but I do want to point out that there is a 5% limitation on the total school hours that may be used for assessment. That doesn't change. And actually, the progress monitoring is a part of this now.
So there's a cap on how much testing districts can provide can provide to our students, and that doesn't change in this bill. When we talk about testing at the beginning of the year, this bill does that. This bill requires that we have a test within the first 30 days of the school year, and that's the first progress monitoring, and then we have one in the middle of the year, and then we have the last one at the end of the year. So we're testing throughout the year, but understand that those first two tests are not going to have any additional disruptions than we currently have, because it is the intent of this bill, and I've gotten reassurances from the department that what we have in progress monitoring is going to mirror in the first two PMs what you see now in the classroom. And in addition to that, one of the things that we didn't talk at length in this, and I just explained it in the beginning, was the study that goes along with this bill. This bill is going to task the department in the legislature with creating a study to see how we can reduce the number of assessments and make the accountability system more seamless, so that for some students it doesn't get stressful. And it's just another day at school instead of them getting stressed out about the potential test that's coming. And the last thing I want to talk about is that Representative Andrade talked about the morale of students. Representative Lupus talked about high stakes. And I mentioned earlier about our role as adults and our role as educators and preparing our kids, whether it's our own children or the kids that are in our classrooms, for life, for the challenges that life brings. And so, I taught for 15 years, and everyone here knows that. But you don't know what I taught, where I taught. So I taught at Colonial High School, which is a Title I school, majority-minority school in Orlando. And I told this story in the last committee, so if you're hearing it again, I apologize. But I want to tell it to those who haven't heard it. And I always felt like I was at the right place, because I felt like I was teaching myself. I felt like I was teaching not just myself, who's a first-generation American, but my dad, who came here at the age of 19. And had my dad come here now at the age of 15, 16, or 17, not knowing English, he would have been one of my students. And so I felt a certain calling to the school that I was at. And I, if it wasn't for running for office and being in the legislature, I would have been at that school until I retired or they kicked me out, because that was my home. And it brought me back to when I was in high school. And I was a really good high school runner. Because of that, I was getting a lot of scholarship offers. And I remember my guidance counselor, I was getting offers from schools all over the country, and I got an offer from Harvard. And my guidance counselor put it in the garbage can in front of me and said, "You're not good enough to go to Harvard." And he said that probably because my parents didn't speak English well. And so I say that because our accountability system over the years has held him and anyone else like him accountable, because now our students, our schools, our kids are in schools that we can't just put things in the garbage. Because of our accountability system, we're challenging our kids at schools like mine to take more AP classes. And because of that, our state leads the nation in the number of kids that are taking AP classes and passing AP classes with the same pass rate that we had before we had that escalated number of level of AP students. And my school, which is majority minority, was one of the highest AP, had one of the highest AP pass rates in the entire county. And that wouldn't have happened back in 1991 when I was graduating from high school in the same county. I had kids in my class. I taught ELL kids for a couple of years. Those are kids, English language learners. And they were my American history class, and it was mostly juniors and seniors. And I remember my kids, many of them would come in, and they couldn't pass the FSA, or back then it was the FCAT. And they were very stressed because they didn't think they were going to graduate from high school. And I told them the same thing that I tell every student, regardless of where you're from or what your background is. And I say, we're not all created equal. We all have our challenges. Maybe yours is you came into this country at a later time in your life and you didn't know English. But at the end of the day, if you're going to be successful, whether it's at school or when you get out of school, and you have challenges that someone else doesn't, you have to work twice as hard as that person in order to be successful. And working twice as hard is something you should be proud of, because when you accomplish something, you know that you had to work harder than others for it. And I would tell them this every year to every student, because I wanted them to understand that life isn't easy. There will be challenges, and as we get older, we all know the challenges become harder for us. When we have kids, the challenges become harder for us. And we can't We can't shelter our children from that. We have to prepare them for those challenges. And the last story I'm going to leave you with, which is really my favorite, is a story about Dr. Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell, Van Mitchell, was our principal for 16 years at Colonial High School. And he was this larger-than-life figure, and he was a big man. Massive hands, you know. He was one of those guys you weren't going to mess with, even at the age of 65. And not the kind of guy that you think would be at a majority Hispanic school leading those kids. But those kids adored him, loved Dr. Mitchell. And I remember at our faculty meetings, he would sit us down, and we would go over all our data. And we would go over bills that were in the legislature at the time. And he would say, I believe this is coming our way, and I'm going to prepare our school for it because we're not going to be reactive to what is coming down from Tallahassee. We're going to be proactive, and we're going to implement all the different strategies to make sure that we go from a C to a B, because we were a C, I think, for 7 straight years. And our goal was to get our school grade up to a B. And during that time, it was in the middle 2000s, there were a lot of changes to the school grading system. And we were right around 1 or 2 points away from being a B. And all of a sudden, because of some changes, we got dropped down to 5 to 6 points, had to start all over again. But sure enough, in year 8, we got a B. And I'll never forget that day. We have a massive courtyard at Colonial High School. And Dr. Mitchell comes on the announcements and asks for every teacher to take their students out in the courtyard and wait for him. And we have these awnings that connected our buildings, and so that, you know, if it's raining, kids can walk and not get wet. And I remember him getting up with a megaphone and walking on top of the awnings. And the guy was 6'4" to begin with. And he gets the megaphone out, and he tells the students that they went from a C to a B. And I thought to myself, well, these kids are just, they're not going to care. Kids are going to be talking to each other, and it's not going to be a big deal to them. It was the most incredible thing I ever experienced as a teacher. These kids erupted in a roar. They were high-fiving. They were hugging. I mean, these are kids that most of the community just wrote off and didn't think cared about their school, didn't think they cared about their grades. And it was one of the proudest moments they had as a student body. And it was all about them attaining a letter grade. But they know how hard they worked. They had a leader that led them to believe that they could do it. And they accomplished it. And it was those experiences that have led me to the position I'm at now, where even as a career educator, I believe in our accountability system. Because I believe that our kids, and when they become adults, are better for it and can succeed. We just have to, as adults, give them the tools and allow them to believe in themselves that they can succeed. This is a great bill. It's supported by stakeholders across the board, school districts, teachers, the teachers union. This is a great bill. We have some work to do on it, and we're going to do it, but I'm proud to sponsor it, I hope I can have all your support when that I close.
Thank you, Representative Placencia. Having closed on the bill, Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Fahn?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Representative Lucas?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Brunel?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Willite?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
15 yeas, ma'am.
Okay, wonderful. Members, by your vote, CS HB 1193 will be reported favorably. Congratulations. Thank you. Is there any further business to bring to the committee this morning? Seeing none, I would just real quick would like to concur with everybody and with Chair Fine. Denise, you've been wonderful. And so we appreciate you. And then also, we couldn't have done it without you. So we appreciate you. And so everybody, seeing none other responses, Representative David Smith moves that we rise. Excellent. Without objection, and the meeting is adjourned.
Good job.